Okay, so the first mini part of this sugya that I want to focus on is the question of changing, reallocating resources that have been designated to a particular purpose. Now, as Gavi correctly notes, we saw some of these Gemara in Erchin when we dealt with the tzedakah from non-Jews. I didn't make you go back to Gemara in Erchin. I gave you the Rif, who just quotes the relevant lines in the Gemara. If you remember the Gemara, then that's fine. And yes, you know, Hashem sometimes sends us show and tell for sheer. I don't want to get into the theological implications of what I just said. If I believe that Hashgacha Pratis would do something like that, I'll attribute it to God. I don't know how it got there, but the yes, the Tzedakah ad campaign that was on my front door, in fact, quotes our sugya and Paskins like a particular interpretation of our sugya, which we'll talk about. Yes, Yonatan, before I have it even started the Gemara. Yes. Intracommunal, yes.
Not like, for example, the case of like eight performances that we had are
basically correct. Our sugya
is focused on intra. Yeah.
Correct. And the cat wants grape juice on a sanitizing wipe. That's really wonderful. Okay, the cats are weird. So the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan, kupa shel tzedaka nigbeit bishnayim. Right, the tzedaka collection is collected by two. Now, one of the main sugyas we're going to get into, which is very fascinating on Daf Tet, is the question of trust and how trust is maintained in halachic institutions. The Gemara is quite striking, as in the Gemara believes that you do not need to be accountable. People just need to trust you. It's a great sugya. You need to make sure they have no reason ever under any circumstances to question you, like not having pockets. That's actually the Gemara's suggestion. Don't have pockets. They don't think you're putting money in them. When you go in to take collections, but we'll get to it. But the Gemara says that money is collected by two, umitchaleket bishlosha, and is divided by three. So that, I want to deal with that part tomorrow, okay? Primarily the Mordechai, Rashi, Rambam, and maybe a little bit in the Beit Yosef, but the question of two or three will hold till tomorrow. Nigbeit mishnayim, it's collected by two, shein osim sfarot ala tzibor pachot mishnayim. Because you don't impose authority over the community with less than two people. Umitchaleket bishlosha, but when you divide it up, you need three people. Sheg kedinei mamonot, like any other court of monetary law, which requires three. Just a reminder, monetary courts require three people, capital courts require 23, and the high court, 71. Then the Gemara says, Tamchoi nigbeit bishlosha, umitchalekit bishlosha, shegvuya vichiluka shavim. The Tamchoi, which is one of the soup kitchen things that we'll talk about, we'll distinguish between the kupa and the Tamchoi soon. That is both collected and divided by three people. And then the Gemara said, what is the Tamchoi? Tamchoi b'chol yom. Tamchoi is a daily soup kitchen, essentially. Kupa me'erev Shabbat l'erev Shabbat. The kupa is more like Tomchei Shabbos, which, as we've talked about, is just a tzedakah that gives up that money weekly for Shabbat. So those are the two types of food-giving institutions that exist in society. And then the Gemara says, "V'rasha'im b'nei ha'ir lasot kupa tamchoi v'tamchoi kupa." You're allowed to switch from one to the other. Ulishanota l'chol mashi yirtzu, and change it to whatever you want. V'rasha'im b'nei ha'ir lasnot al midot v'alasharim v'alschor po'alim v'ulasia al kitzatan. And this next line in the Gemara is the basis for the labor union sugya, which is that a community has the right to set prices, to set weights, and we'll see the exact parameters of that later on. Okay? This is the Gemara that we are now entering into. And what I want to focus on is a very small question, but I think it actually touches on a major overarching thematic point in this sugya. And that is, what does it mean that the Bnei Ha'ir, the members of the city, are allowed to change the allocation of the resources? Okay? Which is a problem, right? If you know anything about fundraising, do you know anything about fundraising laws in America? What? Wisconsin, you can't have raffles? Interesting. Okay. What?
There are a lot of them.
Right. So this is essentially what we call earmarking, right? And legally, if you earmark something, meaning if you give money to an institution, you say, use it whatever you want, so then you can use it whatever you want. But if they earmark it, so and they specifically do that legally, so then the institution is not allowed to change it. Right? They must use it for what it was originally given for. Now, normally that doesn't matter because, as we all know, money is fungible, right? Meaning, if someone says, okay, I'm giving this money to the scholarship fund, right? If there's, you know, $10 million extra dollars in the scholarship fund, then all the non-earmarked money that the institution had decided would go to the scholarship fund, they can suddenly move to the building fund, right? But theoretically, if, right, consistently, the money that was donated was all earmarked, right, and the, you know, the institution had not earmarked, you know, had not put in its own money, which remained fungible, right, earmarking can really limit the way that an institution is allowed to use money, right? This is, right, creates a lot of issues in some of these colleges that have ridiculously large endowments. But a lot of it is tied up because of earmarking, right? Meaning, look, we know that the top institutions in America, their endowments are significantly more than the coffers of many countries, right? Harvard alone has a endowment of $50 billion, which is like a bit of a mind-numbing number. And yet they keep getting like $350 million donations. But they will always tell you, no, we don't have $50 billion liquid, right? It's earmarked. Okay, fine. Good for that. So what does it mean that they can change it, and why can they change it? This is the question I want to focus on. Yes, Adam?
Does earmark mean
it could be for anything or specific? No, earmark is specific, right? It's for this specific thing. Right, I give it for the endowment. I give it for the building fund. I give it for. But the Gemara says that even something that was theoretically earmarked for the tamchoi, they can switch it to the kupa, and whatever they want to change it to, they can change it to. That's what the Gemara says. Okay, so I want to analyze that. What does that phrase mean, and why does it make any legal sense? So, before we see the Rishonim, tell me. Yes, Rami, what does it mean and why does it make sense?
Okay, because in building, oftentimes we don't really care about the specific cause. We care about the fact that it's selling money, that you're doing a good action. And as long as that money is doing only a good action, then that is law.
Okay, so Rami says that this is all umdina. Right? It's all based on what people think. Meaning, if in fact you had somebody who said, I only want this money to go to purpose X, then it can only be purpose X. But nobody really cares. People just want to do good things with their money. They support an institution. And that's it. Okay, so what, let's say that that's right. What would the parameters of that principle therefore be? So I think there'd be two parameters, right? One would be if they explicitly say, I'm giving this only for cause X, then it goes to cause X. And the other extreme is something that plausibly you couldn't argue they meant to give their money to, couldn't go to, right? Meaning there must be a range of things that they meant, right? Like if you could have something that nobody, everyone would look at it and say, they obviously didn't mean that, then that would be out. Okay, that is a totally fair read of this sugya, that this is simply a psychological assumption, and the only controlling factor here is what do people mean, what do they say, and that's it. Potentially, okay, yes. Okay, so Ezra takes a different perspective, and Ezra says, no, the key to this sugya is this notion of community. That there's something about donating to a community that makes it, that it belongs to everybody. And if everybody agrees that the money should be redirected, then a community can do that. Now, what's the difference between what Ezra says and what Rami says? What? Right, meaning Ezra's, the way Ezra formulated his claim, I don't know if he meant it this way, but the way he formulated his claim, so we'll call it Ezra's for now, is that it would not be true, it would be true if I donated to the mayor's discretionary fund in Modi'in, but it would not be true if I donated to Migdal. Right? Right, because you made a claim that it's about community. And therefore, it would have to be a communal type of donation rather than an institutional or personal one, right? Meaning if you donated to poor person X, right, he would have to, you said, but I only want it for clothes, right? I know that you can go to the soup kitchen to get food. I know that's maybe less dignified, but, you know, the winter's coming. I really want you to buy clothes. He can only use it for that. Or maybe even an institution. Or maybe an institution is borderline. I don't know what you think. Right? But the way you framed it was community versus anything else. Right? That there's something unique about community. Okay. Yeah, you understand.
So you say that you don't care still about the intention or purpose of the money, but rather care about the results that the money will
meaning?
Give. So therefore, like, it doesn't actually matter, and like, it doesn't matter what they gave the money for, but we want to get like the best possible results out of the money given to the community.
Okay, so Yonatan takes a different approach. It's not about intent, and it's not unique to community, right? It's because there is a consequentialist ethos that pervades halacha in general, right? By consequentialist, I mean we care about results, right? And therefore, this is an objective statement that whenever people donate things, they're maybe not so good at donating it. Right? We all know the problem of canned donations. I assume you know this, right? That canned donations are really bad, right? They're just pointless, right? Because most people who donate cans bought it at retail price. Where if you donate money to the same soup kitchen, A, they don't have to store the cans, and therefore they lower costs. And they can buy it wholesale, and therefore they can actually get more for the can. So can donations, they're not bad. They're just really not, they're not as ideal as donating money to the exact same institutions. Now, the reason they happen to do can donations is because people like feeling like they're giving something mamash, right? They're giving something tangible. It helps them give, right? So it's better than nothing. If that's where you're going to get people, right, and obviously if you have things left over, that's one thing. But what they let me rephrase it before anyone thinks I'm like evil here, right? It has been shown, if you have cans at home, you have extra food, you want to donate to a soup kitchen, and otherwise it's not going to go to anybody, so obviously that's fine, right? But the question is, what is more effective for your money? If you don't have cans right now, and the question is you going and buying it at retail price, and then forcing the soup kitchen to store it, or just giving the money to the soup kitchen to do it as they see fit, right? The latter is better. Exactly. Correct. Now, obviously, right, now there are certain, right, now. But my point being that, as Yonatan says, look, really what we want is that poor people fed. People aren't always so good at figuring out what that is because they think that they should go out and buy cans and then donate them, right? Which is wrong. right? They should donate cans they have or give money. That's what they should do. Unless you go to construction, and then obviously the right thing is cans. You don't know what construction is? Okay, New York guys, if you ever do this, Aura and I did this one of our first dates. I didn't know about it either, but Aura had heard about it. It's actually interesting. In the World Financial Offices, the downtown, like all the way down, right? If you just take like the one train or the E or the C or whatever, you just go all the way down to World Trade Center. So once a year, they do this massive basic donation of cans. But the way they do it is they have a competition called Canstruction where people build these monstrosities of like, they use basically food cans as Legos. So they use like tens of thousands of cans and they have a competition and they have like a viewing and then all those cans go to charity, right? So like, it's very cool and I'm sure they get a lot of things and, you know, and it is a way of getting people to give in the way they wouldn't otherwise. Okay? But anyways, Yehonatan claims that basically maybe what's going on is, no, this is just how halacha works in general, is that it's not just about intent, it's that halacha wants money to get to the right people, and they recognize people are bad at that. So halacha just says we're going to override your intention, and we're going to say we care about consequences, right? Yehonatan, I think we talked about this, Yehonatan is a consequentialist, right, when it comes to charity, right? He just wants to... Right, he said maybe last time also. Right, I said I have a friend who is a diehard consequentialist, and you know, I said this is, you know, everyone has their own thing that shakes their amuna. Right, he said only half in jest to me at some point that the fact that I can that it is demonstrably true that halacha is not only consequentialist, even in the realm of charity, is what shakes his amuna. Right, that's how much of a consequentialist he is. Right. Like, you know, there's this website, there's a few websites that are devoted to consequentialist, consequentialist charities, right? Utilitarian-based charities that basically figure out for how little money, which charities use the most percentage of your money to do the best good, right? And they calculate, you know, what is it going to, how much does it cost, how much is the overhead, right? Consistently, always, like, the top one is malaria nets, right? Because, like, one malaria net costs, like, $1, but it can save, like, 10 kids' lives or something like that. So, bang for your buck, it's, like, you know, much better. And then, like, things that are always bad are, like, I don't know. Or you can look at it. What? What? I don't know. That has nothing to do with consequentialist ethics. I'm just saying, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about charities that really mean to do well, but different ones, right? Like I said, right? I am a personal big fan of Lekit Yisrael because it has this very smart donation model, right? Which is that instead of collecting money to buy food for poor people, it collects money to, so they have the resources to collect leftover food from restaurants in the army and redistribute it, right? And therefore, for every dollar that you donate, it's much more effective in both saving waste and getting more food to poor people because they don't have to buy new food. They're saving waste and getting food more inexpensively. Right? There are really good charities like this, right? They took a big hit, honestly, with COVID, right? Because restaurants have been closed. And health restrictions don't necessarily do it, but because they really are good at this, so at the beginning of the whole thing, they came up with a plan that would also, which would not be as cost effective, but would still be very cost effective in accomplishing two stuckout. And that is, they found a catering or place or something like that that had to lay off its employees, right, and raise money to hire those people back to pack food for poor people so they could both give people back their jobs and help poor people, right? Which was actually a very clever way of doing things. So there is definitely this idea, right, that maybe we just care about the consequences. Okay, good. So that's Yehonatan's claim. Ezra wants another claim here. Gittler? Forgot his first name? Yeah, I'm a big fan of the tzedakah because it's like I said, it's a very, very... Here's my endorsement for Tzedakah. I'm not paid to do this. I just think it's a good Tzedakah. I donate money to them. It is my preferred Tzedakah I try to diversify my Tzedakah and make sure a percentage of it goes to Tzedakah in the classic sense of like getting food to poor people. It is one of my two preferred Tzedakah. Right. The other one is simply the local one in Efrat, just because I feel like I should support local Tzedakah because of the laws of Kadima. But in terms of general ones, this is my personal preference. Okay. So with that, there's one central machlokas that I wanted to analyze, and that is the machloket between Tosfot and the Rimi Gash. By the way, I realize we've done a lot of bios. We have not done Tosfot. So let's quickly do Tosfot. Who or what is Tosfot? Very good. It is a catch-all for about 150 rabbis over the course of 200 years in France and or Germany, except for a few outliers who are also in, like, Switzerland or something. Or, you know, I mean, there are also, like, Tosfos Chachmei Anglia, right, so there are, but those are not really classically the Balei Tosfot. If you are interested in figuring out who wrote any particular Tosfot, that's a very interesting field of study. Most of the Tosfot that are published on the Daf, but not all of them, but the highest percentage of Tosfot on the Daf are published by Rabbi Lazar of Tuch. Tosfot Tuch, which is a fluke of the publisher, who, if you remember, wasn't Jewish, who got advice and felt that was the best Tosfot. It happens not to be the best Tosfot. The best Tosfot is usually Tosfos Shantz, but be that as it may, that's what Tosfot is. And Ephraim Urbach wrote a two-volume work called the Balei HaTosafot, in which he goes through and makes claims based on who's quoted in each one, who arranged each Tosfot, and it's very interesting. Fine. So what does Rabbeinu Tam say? Who wants to tell me what Rabbeinu Tam says? How does Rabbeinu Tam understand this? So yeah. Nireh l'Rabbeinu Tam. Yes, Tosfos, Chesam and Beis. What does Tosfos say? Wait, so first of all, what does Tosfos say? What Rabbeinu Tam says, you can change it even l'what? Right, even l'davar ha-reshut is what he says. Even for non-mitzvah purposes.
Right.
And then he says, but wait a second. Doesn't the Gemara in Erechin, which Gavi alluded to, seem to say not that way? Because what does the Gemara in Erechin say? Right, so the Gemara said, I'm on the nog of shraga leve kenishta azul l'shanotel l'davar ha-reshut. If you donate, what's a shraga? A candle. Or a shraga. Shraga, the name means candle. Shraga, yes. Someone says, this coin will go to tzedakah until it comes to the gabbai tzedakah. It is mutter to change it. Once it's collected by the tzedakah collector, asur l'shano da, l'davar ha-reshut. You can't use it for non-mitzvah purposes. Hacha shibnei o'ir mishanim ota shiny. But here, where the community changes it, it's okay. I want to hold the thoughts yet. First, I want to get the two shittot out. Then I want to analyze them. Hold it. I know you could already analyze it, but I want to see the two shittot. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam used to sometimes give this money in the kupa to the community watchmen. Okay? Hold it. That's Rabbeinu Tam. Who's his main interlocutor, which is very, this is very ahistoric, but that's fine. Who, for the purpose of Psak here, who does everybody quote as arguing Rabbeinu Tam, even though he preceded Rabbeinu Tam and never met Rabbeinu Tam, heard Rabbeinu Tam, lived in a different country than Rabbeinu Tam, but fine, right? What? No, so the Rush quotes his interlocutor. The Rush is one of the people who puts them in conversation. But the Rosh quotes who? Rabbeinu Yosef. Which Rabbeinu Yosef? The Rimi Gash. Or Rabbi Yosef Ibn Megaz. right? As we have noted before. Rumigash, yes. Okay, so if you turn to Aleph Chavtet, so we had done part of it, but the part of it which starts on our sugya, which says Chet Amud Bet, from here on in, I'm talking about our sugya. Okay, good. Right, I said we did have, you know, the half that talked about our sugya. So the Gemara, he quotes the Gemara. Ten Rabban and Kupa Nigmet Bishnayim Mitchaleket Bishlosha. Nigmet Bishnayim Tenos in Sura Alatzibor B'Mamon Bachem Bishnayim. Umitchaleket Bishlosha, etc. Okay. Let's skip down after he quotes the Gemara. He quotes Rabbeinu Tam. Peish Rabbeinu Tam. Ulushan Otam L'chol Mashir Yitzu Afil Ledvar Rishut. Uvehitir Liten Ma'ora Kupa L'shom Ra'ir L'fiyah Sh'aldat B'nei Ha'ir Notanim Otah. Right? He quotes Rabbeinu Tam. V'yesh lahavi ra'aya lidvarav mehad degartina zhal nevim minarav ner levit agmen asur l'shanota. Now, Rabbeinu Tam in Tosvot, the Gemara in Erechin, is it a proof for him or against him? How does Tosvot take it? How does Tosfos take it? A support or disproof? Neither. Tosfos negates it. Tosfos said this is talking about something else. The Rush goes farther and says, no. The fact that it's talking about something else is in fact support. Right? Right? Did you notice that nuance in the Rush? Okay. Right, but Tosfos just says, don't ask me a question from Erechin. Right? Because that's talking about something else. Right? That's talking about not B'nai Ha'ir. And the Rosh goes farther and he says, V'yeh zavi raya lidvarav. I can prove it to you from Erechin. Mehav digar simen yisrael shit nadev minorav ner levet agnez asur l'shanota, that if you gave a candle to the shul, you can't change it. Tzav rav chia barav l'meimar lo shna lidvar reshut v'lo shna lidvar mitzvah. And amar rav ami hachi amar yochan lo shna lidvar reshut al lidvar mitzvah mut l'shanota. The Gemara says, for reshut you can, for mitzvah you can. V'hani mili achelo nishtake Hashem ba'alea mimenu. Alme nishtake Hashem ba'alea mimenu. Afil dvar reshut mutar l'shanota. But once the name had been forgotten, so then you can change it. V'ata'am. Why? V'fisha mitnadev la'avi liyad tzibor al dara tzibor hu mitnadvo. Because something who donates, someone who gives money to the tzibor, donates it based on however the tzibur wants to use it. V'ha d'amrinan be'erachin omar sela zulit stakach lo bat liyad hagabai mutar l'shanota mishabet l'gad yad hagabai asur l'shanota. What did the Gemara say? That you can only change it before it gets to the gabai tzaka's hands. Ha'ani mili gabai aval tzibur l'chon l'shanot. That's only the gabai, but the community can. The gabai nami daf kol dvar reshut, and the gabai can't change it for dvar reshut aval dvar mitzvah mutar l'shanota, but for a mitzvah, you can change it. Okay? Let's skip down for a minute to, he says, v'harav Rav Yosef Halevi Zal, right? But the Rimi Gash says what? Katav hadik amr l'shanota l'chol mashir tzeh dafka l'davar shu tzorach aniyim. When you change it, you can only give it to something that the poor need. Kigon ksut uveit lina, right, like clothing and a place to sleep, ukura and burial. Af al pi de kupavet namchoy mazonei nechalon shadu dvarim achirim ubilvad shu l'tzorach aniyim al dvarim she'ein tzorach aniyim ein lehem reshut l'shanotan to have it like kigozo aniyim. But if it can go to anything for the poor people, but that's it. And you can't, it can, the Havi Raya, what was his proof? He proved it from the Sugya in Shkalim that Motar Aniyim Laniyim. Motar Shvuyim Lishvuyim. Motar Ani Laoto Ani. Motar Shavui Laoto Shavui. That the Mishnah in Shkalim tells you that the leftover money of the poor people go to the poor, leftover money to a captive goes to a captive. leftover money to a specific poor person goes to that poor person, and money raised for a specific captive goes to that captive. What? Correct. And now, the 1 second. And the Rush himself pushes back, and he says, "V'nir eli, de'ein ra'aya mima shehevi me'ahid shkalim." He says, "I think that's not good proof. De'hatam lo ayri b'ma'ot shel kupa, ela yidei mikre." He said that was only talking about money that you collected for a particular need, but not for an institutionalized charity. And in that case, you can't give it to different poor people. But the kupa that was made by the community was made bistam. Okay. So we have two main shitot, but we'll see there's nuances in these shitot. You understand? What do you want to say before I talk? Yeah.
I have a question.
We're going to get to what that means. We're going to get to that. That's going to be part of the question of the guilds and stuff, is what... Once you have this communal institution, how do they make decisions? Rove, everybody, representatives, things like that. We'll have to get to it. What?
Landowning white men.
Landowning white men. Yeah, that's obviously the right way to do it. Okay. But let's focus for a moment on this main machloket, Rabbeinu Tam and the Rimigash. Okay? Rabbeinu Tam says that the money is permitted to be changed to whatever you want, even davar harishut. And he says the Gemara in Erechin is not a proof. Rush goes farther and says it is proof for him by virtue of the fact that it specifically is talking about cases in which you designated it for a menorah or something like that, but in general, it sounds like it's fine. The Rimigash says, no, you have to give it to poor people because of the suga in shkalim that motar aniyim laniyim, right? That the leftover money goes to the poor people. So all it means that you can change it is if you raise money for the poor people's food and it turns out they don't need food, then you can use it to buy clothes. Before we get to the Rush's own nuance here, what do you think is the fundamental machloket, Rabbeinu Tam, Rimigash? Ezra.
So the Rimigash uses that once it's donated, it already belongs to the poor people. In a sense, so any deviation from that is stealing. And according to Tosfo, it's like similar to how if a person decides to donate something until it's not being collected,
okay, so okay, go Rami. Yeah, I'll hear your positions before we. Yeah, I'm not gonna say. I didn't say wrong. What wrong? Go Rami. Go. I have no idea what you're talking about. I'm sorry. I mean, there are Gemaras that, I don't know. Okay. So let's try this again. Okay? We have a Gemara. One second. We have a Gemara. Let's try this again. We have a Gemara. Let's frame it a little bit differently. I'm not saying Ezra's wrong. I want Ezra to sharpen what he said. We have a Gemara in Shkalim. We have a sugya in Shkalim that tells us explicitly that the leftover money for a poor person goes to a poor person. Now, I want to be very careful. According to the Rimigash, from that sugya, he derives that if you donate money to a kupar atamchoy, I can switch it, but only for the poor people. The Russian's response to that is, there's a difference between a kupa and a ad hoc fundraiser, right, a GoFundMe campaign for a particular poor person. That's his argument. Okay? So now I want to... What you said is definitely true for the Rush, okay? The Rush agrees with Rabbeinu Tam when it comes to the kupa, meaning that money given to the kupa, the Rush believes, can be redirected anywhere. But he agrees with Rimigash that money that I raised for this particular poor person, for this particular procedure, the leftover goes to that person. And Ezra is 100% right that the majority of the poskim understand the Rush, at least, in the way that Ezra just said, which is that money raised for a particular poor person, the second I raise it for him, it's as if he already owns the money, and therefore, even at which point it goes beyond his poverty level, he gets to keep it. Okay? The Rush, though, following Rabbeinu Tam, does not believe that the same thing is true for money raised for the kupa. Ezra is now suggesting that that formulation that people put for the Rush is true for the Rimigash as well. Right? That the Rimigash thinks that any donation, that what that sugya teaches you is that any money that is earmarked to the poor, individual, communal, institutional, doesn't matter, becomes owned by the poor and therefore must go to the poor, right? So Ezra is arguing that what the Rush holds for a localized GoFundMe campaign, the Rimigash holds about any earmarked donations, okay? So then what does Rabbeinu Tam hold? Okay, so you're assuming Rabbeinu Tam would say the same thing, okay? I have a slight, here's my problem with applying that to Rabbeinu Tam, okay? Which is, as Rabbeinu Tam is in Tosfot, Ezra, what can you use the redirected funds for? Afilu Dvar Rishut. What does the Rosh say? Only for Dvar Mitzvah, right? Which means that, and the Ran I gave you, if you note, actually quotes this position without the qualification of the Rush, that it needs to be Dvar Mitzvah, like we have in Rabbeinu Tam, in Tosfot, that it's even Dvar Rishut. Okay? I want you to be able to justify even that extreme position of Rabbeinu Tam, that the money raised for the kupa, for the soup kitchen, can be used by the community, even Lidvara Rishut. Yeah.
So I guess the money donated goes to the specific thing, right? And once it fulfills that requirement, that money it can't go towards that thing anymore because that thing is controlled, right? And therefore it just defaults to go back to the community.
Okay, but remember, by a default, extra money to a poor person, it goes to the poor person.
Right, but there's no specific poor person who gets the money. So when you're not donating it to, pay for this person's surgery or something, you're giving it to the community providing a service to people, and so the community didn't keep it.
Yeah. Okay. I think Ezra's 100% right. What do you want to say, Jonathan? Yes. You're
saying that...
I didn't say anything yet. I said nothing yet. I mean, I said many things, but I haven't said anything.
If you were to work any excess just goes to them anyways. Wouldn't that mean, though, that the excess money given to this individual poor person is no longer, like, actual stock of money? Wouldn't you, not really be getting mixed with it?
Good. Okay. Good. So now, let's put this question and what Ezra said, and now let's try again. Okay? I think that the first question you have to ask in this sugya, okay, but there's nuances, but I think the first question you have to ask is the question that Ezra has consistently picked up on here, right, in different ways, and that is the following. What is the difference, conceptually, between a government-funded soup kitchen and Tomchei Shabbos? Yeah.
Okay, so presumably Tomchei Shabbos could not survive without its donors. The government-funded one presumably is at least part, they can demand.
Okay, so Rami raises a pragmatic difference, right, which is that is whether it essentially relies on donors or not, right, whether it has coercive rights, right, coercive powers. But I think that's right, but I think it points to something even bigger, right, is that we really need to... Okay, I'm going to, for a second, go back to what I sent you this morning, right? As I said, right, I got show and tell from God. Right? And again, don't read anything into my belief on the nature of Hashkacha. Just don't, okay? Right? So look for a second at what I sent you, okay? Yes, we have, I have 7-year-old kids making Parsha quizzes that I'm not sure I knew every answer to right away, and Mayor of Efrat is sending out, halachic analysis to explain why you should donate to the kupa. Fine. So he writes, Toshavim Yikarim. Right, so he says, Befros Elena Shana Chadasha, Ani Ma'achel Lachem L'Nei Mishvachotchem Shana Tova Metuka. It's a new year. I wish you a good happy new year, okay? I wish that to all of you too. You have now been wished a happy new year by Oded Revivi. Okay? The mayor of, very good. Now, I want to be very careful here. Okay? When the mayor of Efrat raises money for charitable causes, how do we conceptualize those funds? And here I think we have two very important options that we need to put on the table before we can subdivide them and get into nuance. One way of conceptualizing that is, this is stucca that happens to be organized by the centralized government. Or what is it?
The government making sure that everyone is...
Which, in other words, is what? Remember the sugya we're in? Hello, Zion, Chet. What is this sugya? What?
Taxes.
Yes, thank you. This is taxes. This is communal obligations. This isn't charity. It's the social welfare net. It is, right? If I ask you, is welfare charity?
Yeah.
So, very good. Thank you, Republicans. But the answer is, it may function as charity, but technically it's not. Right? I'll prove it to you. Okay? And I'm not saying this as someone who, this doesn't matter whether you support it or not. Right? Meaning, I know there's a lot in the rhetoric you use, but let me just, very simple. Is the money that you pay to taxes in America that goes to pay welfare tax deductible in a way the money you give to a charity is? Of course it's redundant. That's my point, right? In fact, if you ask most, right, if you ask most people on the right who don't like social welfare nets, not the cruel ones, right, the very devout from Christians, right, who make up a broad part of the right, what will they tell you? What will they point to as why they don't support it? What will they just say? Many times, what will they say? Stop! Narishkeit. Okay. Very simple. They will say, it's not that we don't want to support these people, it's that we don't think the best way to do it is the government. And they'll point to the fact that on average, Republicans, people who identify as conservative, give a higher percentage of their income to charity than people on the left, right? Which has been proven over and over again, right? Now, I don't want to get into which you agree with, but there's something important here, which is people on the right in America believe that the best way to take care of the poor is to do it through charity, which means leaving it in the hands of individuals. And people on the left, again, broad strokes, right, obviously, think that poor people are more likely to be taken care of. It's the responsibility of the government, right? They may both have the same result. But one of those is a government-run social welfare program, and the other is charity, and they don't function the same way, right? Those are distinct. Now, we can argue about which is better and which is worse. I'm talking descriptively, right? Not prescriptively. Descriptively, right? A soup kitchen run by a church or a shul is a charity, right? Is it whatever, 501c, recognized, whatever it is, right? Right? And food stamps is not charity, right? That's exactly the critique of many people on the right, which is, why did you take something which should be charity and by individuals and turn it into a federal aid program, right? But the point is, descriptively, one of those is charity and one of those is not. One second. There's a big difference, right? Which is, let's talk about it. When you're talking about welfare, you're talking about food stamps, you're talking about entitlement. Use whichever one you want to use, right? I'm not going to get into politically charged use of these terminologies, right? What is the first thing that people on the, right? What is the first thing that the people on the budget committee will say, as soon as you want to increase entitlements. Stop being cynical. Right? What will they say? Where is this new money coming from? And the answer is either new taxes, right, or what? Decrease spending somewhere else, right?
Or just make money out of nowhere.
Or print money. Fine. Fine. But this is important. Yaakov's right. Right? Well, what does that show? That shows that food stamps, okay, even if their stated goal is to help the poor, they are not charity, right? They're a government program, which, again, it may be that the government took it up because they believe that morally the government should take the role of charity, or it thinks that practically people won't provide for these people. I don't care, right? The point is, once you have it, it functions not as charity, it functions as a government program. And therefore, everything that comes with it, which means that the government can choose to raise money for taxes or can choose to decrease money from defense spending, right? It can choose to fire half the members of Congress or whatever and use that. I don't know, whatever it wants to do. I don't know if it can do that constitutionally. I'm not really sure. But whatever it wants to do, okay? It can do whatever it wants, right? But it's a government fund. And therefore, that's why people kick and scream when people, right? That's why people on the left, let's say, will kick and scream when the Republicans will say, right? Taxes are too high because you're paying too much to entitlements. We'll lower taxes. Right, put money back in the pocket of the middle class and stop paying entitlements, right? But that decision never happened on the level of charity, right? It happened on the level of government, right? That's not true. And it, can someone then go to the government and say, wait a second, last year you earmarked X number of money for entitlements, and this year you're not, right? What will you say? Yeah, we changed the budget. Go away from me, right? We can do whatever we want. You don't like it? Vote someone else in different for president, senator, representative, whatever, next time. Masher, whatever you want, right? Vote somebody else in. But the way to change that is vote somebody else in to deal with the allocation of resources. What? Sure, whatever it might be. But, okay, if the local soup kitchen started taking the money and using it for malaria nets, okay? Right? Malaria nets, right? Is malaria nets a good thing to give money to? Let's say it is. Let's say it is the, right from a utilitarian perspective, the most effective charity. What the donors can come to the soup kitchen and say, Mapitom, if I wanted to be utilitarian and give money to the malaria nets, I would have gone online and done that. But I didn't. I gave it to the local soup kitchen because that's what I wanted to do. You don't have a right to do that. Right? I earmarked it. Right, and if it's not in your description of that, if that's the type of thing you allocate resources to, you're not allowed to do it. Right? So, broadly speaking, I think, and this is what Ezra was getting at, I think, right, even if Ezra didn't realize it, that the fundamental machlokes, before we get into nuances, between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rimi Gash, and how you conceptualize our sugya, is how do you look at a kupana tamkoi? Rabbeinu Tam says, yes, it has charitable totsa'ot, right, results. But in the end of the day, this is a government-run soup kitchen. This is, right, it functions on the laws of government resources. And if the government decides to switch it because, Baruch Hashem, there are less poor people this year, right? I mean, this is not the year to say that. It's not true. But, right? But halavai, right? But Baruch Hashem, their last poor people this year, or whatever, right? Then the government is allowed to do that. And if the government says, I'm going to give that money, not just to different poor people, or not just to clothes instead of food, but I'm going to take the money that I thought I was going to allocate to the soup kitchen, and now I'm going to use it for security, I'm going to use it for education, I'm going to use it for whatever, the answer is, they're allowed to, because that's how governments work. Money can be moved around, and it doesn't, you don't need to ask the people that donated, right, or they taxed, they just got to publish a new budget bill, which I know is easier said than done. I got that, right? This year in Israel, the budget year for the entire year is going to be published in the last week of December, which, whatever, right? That's dysfunctional government for you. That happens sometimes. I don't know if it's ever happened before, but it's happening this year. So Rabbeinu Tam says it can be changed l'davar harishut. Rabbeinu Tam, I argue, says, and right? And that's why, according to the Rabbeinu Tam, the sugya in Erechin is not a question. That's a talking with something else. That's talking about stucca. That's talking about a donation to a shul. That's talking, right? And definitely, the mission on Shkolim, right, is not even relevant for Rabbeinu Tam. It's not relevant for Rabbeinu Tam. Motar aniyim laniyim. This has nothing to do with motar aniyim laniyim. This is kupa. This is a social welfare program. This is food stamps. If the government says that there aren't enough people this year who need those handouts, entitlements, whatever you call it, or alternatively, right, they just raise the definition of poverty, right, which the government can do, right? That's the great thing about being the government. You can do whatever you want, right? Not whatever you want. I should be careful. That suddenly... What? I know. See, it used to be I would say that everyone understand he doesn't really mean that. But now they'll say, oh, clearly he's a Trump supporter because that is the way that he has been caricatured by the left, that he thinks he can even shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, and he meant that seriously. I really don't want to get into politics. I really don't care, right? So that's the type changing budgets are something that governments are allowed to do, right? So I think that the first question in this, and this, again, it seems like a small question, but I really think it's very important, right, is because at some level, right, Rabbeinu Tam versus the Rimigash is a lot of what happens in public discourse, right, is where people will look to the sugya and you'll see, aha, halacha always believed in X, Y, and Z. Right, the question is not really, what did halacha believe in, right? Halacha said you always have a community that has a kupa and a tamchoy, right? But what is this thing called kupa and tamchoy, right? There are different ways of conceptualizing it. One is as social welfare set up by the government. The other is as government-run charity funds, right? And those aren't the same, right? Rabbeinu Tam says this is government, and therefore you want to change it for the shomrim, for security, right? Or in modern terms, you want to take money out of food stamps and put it in the defense budget? Right? That's exactly what Rabbeinu Tam says. Rabbeinu Tam says, go ahead, because it's government money. And as Rami says, how do I know, what would support Rabbeinu Tam's notion that this is not charity? Because it is coercively taxed by the government. That should set off, you know, alarms if you think this is charity, right? It's not normal charity, right? This is government entitlements, right? And the government can choose how to allocate those resources. Rimi Gash says, no, right? This is motar aniyim laaniyim. This is staka, okay? This is staka. Now, I want to point out that I don't think that the rush, as he quotes Rabbeinu Tam, is the same as Rabbeinu Tam. Or, not obviously, okay? I thought I'd cover this in one day. I see that I'm not going to. It'll be 2 days. That's fine, because I really think this is important. But I want to, let me just say the last point in the rush, and then we'll have to finish this again tomorrow. The last point in the rush was, what was the rush's last comment? right, that we read, which is, he said, you know why Rimi Gash is wrong? Because there's a difference between raising money for a particular ani and this. Because Rabbeinu Tam, right, what is the Rosh really saying? There's a difference. If even the government can choose to have a charitable fund, right, and not frame it as taxes. So what I showed you here, right, is the government is now running taxes, right, is now saying we are collecting, we're asking you to donate, right, but the government is actually running 12 separate charity funds, one each month, right, in Efrat. You don't have to remember that. It's not important, right? But the point is the government can do that, right? So the Rosh says, look, if you're raising for a particular poor person, so even if it's done by the community, so then it takes the, then it becomes charity, and then, as Ezra says, the poor people essentially own it, because I'm raising it for you. You can do that. But that's not what's happening in the Kupa and the Tamchoi, right? So the Rosh is aware of these distinctions. He just says, it depends, how did I do it? If I raised it for the communal set soup kitchen, so look, I don't change the taxes for the soup kitchen year to year. I use it for whatever I need it for. And if 1 year, Baruch Hashem, there's no poor people in the city, right? So then I'll use it. Correct. That's the cynical way of dealing with this, right? Okay, I thought we would finish it today. I want to point out that the Rabbeinu Tam, okay, let me just finish this, and Yonah can take have the last word. Rabbeinu Tam himself says nothing about intent, right? He just says, change it to Varashut. And the Rimi Gash says nothing about intent. He just says, this is Motar Aniyim Laniyim. And that's why I suggest that Rabbeinu Tam himself and the Rimi Gash himself, I think they're arguing on this axis, right? Which is important in our sugya, because remember, we asked this by Tamid Chacham also, right? Is this a globalized vision that Rabbanan Lo Tzrichin Netiruta, or is it a tax, right? Is it a tax rule? So I'm now asking the same thing here. But the Rosh introduces Rami's point, which is maybe there's another way of coming at this sugya, which is not about the conceptual framework of everywhere here, but is what do the people intend? Right? So tomorrow we have to look back at the Rosh. I really thought I would do this in one day, but we won't. So here are the things I want to look at tomorrow. One is this question of intent. The second is, now let's get into the nitty-gritty here, which is, are you allowed to change it even the Dvar Rishud or only the Dvar Mitzvah? Right? Which is a sub-machloket within Rabbeinu Tam that I think forces us to sharpen our formulations. I give you the Chedusha Anshei Shem, which is the really, really, really small print on the side by the Rif. Do you get to it today? Okay, good. So it's good we're taking another day. I thought we'd do it in one day, but that's fine. 2 days is totally fine. I want you to do that. Fine. Okay? That's what I want you to think about. I want to flesh these out and sharpen them tomorrow. Yehonatan, I'm going to...